Okay, so if you've been following along with us, we've walked through the parables. So first week was an introduction, then we did the parables of the kingdom, which is the first section. Then we did 2 weeks, actually, in parables of grace, because we just blazed too fast during the first time. We slowed down last week, and then tonight we're headed to the third group, and hopefully have learned from going so fast, I'm backing up a little, and just have an approach tonight. Hopefully that'll help us. So if you remember, we broke Jesus' life down into the 3 years of public ministry that he had, that started with his baptism and going up by being tempted by the devil. And then, yeah, that made Derek yawn. But Jesus, like Derek, resisted sleep. Then there was the feeding of the 5,000 that's on all the synoptic gospels. That kind of, it was a transition from Jesus being extremely popular to sort of hiding away and moving. And that gate, he started giving parables, and we call them the parables of grace. But these first parables, the kingdom parables, our themes were this, that the kingdom was everywhere, Catholic, that it was mysterious. Like, we don't really understand. It's like a seed. How does it live? It's at work. It's not potential. It was actually doing stuff, and it elicited a response, mostly a hostile response. And you can say, well, Dax, why? I want the parables to say something else. A lot of times people say, right? We're looking for what the parable's saying. We're looking to try and fit them more into a applicational context. This becomes very applicational if you realize this is what God wants us to know about his kingdom. It becomes, wow, it's supposed to be a mysterious kingdom. We don't know a lot about it sometimes. Like, these are good things for us to know. This is sort of the first group. The second group we looked at last time, these parables of grace. And parables of grace became interlinked with the three times that Jesus predicted his own death and his ministry in this phase between the feeding of the 5,000 and when he entered Jerusalem in this last week of his life. So we looked at these last week again, this idea of upside down power, left-handed, not right-handed, and that's just my name for it. It just means it appears weak when he's strong. And then this idea of the least and the last and the little and the lost receive the kingdom. That's what grace is, right? It's favor for the undeserving. And then it's about death and resurrection, not life and performance. So we saw several examples of that. We ended last week with the Pharisee and the publican, kind of thinking through the one who gets mercy, totally undeserved. The end of all religious acts in the mystery of Jesus' death and resurrection. So these central parables are about Jesus talking about grace. Okay, so tonight we're hitting the last ones. The last ones happened in the last week of Jesus' earthly ministry. So if you think about 3 years, and then all of a sudden we're in the last week. And the last week, he actually says some parables, which is actually amazing because he knows he's going where? To the cross, to his death. He knows he's going to get beaten up. He says, we're going to get turned over to the Gentiles to get whipped and beaten. He says, before he does it, he knows. So he knows that, and yet he's still speaking in parables, even in the last week of his life. Which you say, well, last week, that's like 3 years, and the last week is only like 3% of his ministry. But in every gospel account, it's about 30% of the text. So if you go ahead and read John, all of a sudden you're in John 11, you're like headed, or 12, you're headed into the last week of his life. In Matthew 19, you're in the last week of his life, all the way through 28, right? So the last portion of Jesus' life on earth, the gospel writers spend a lot of time on the Passion Week, on Jesus' death and resurrection. So that's where we're in tonight, is this idea between Palm Sunday, which is the when Jesus entered into Jerusalem for the last week there, a triumphal entry, we call it, and his death. And I put resurrection and ascension because those are bound up together. That's what we're looking at tonight. So you'll notice, and we'll notice as we go through, the parables that he speaks take on a little different flavor, thus the parables of judgment. Okay, here they are. And again, I don't mean to confuse you, so I broke them down a little bit differently tonight. This is the event we're talking about, Palm Sunday, when he comes in Jerusalem, all the way until his betrayal, crucifixion, death, resurrection at the end. So this is his life. This is in your handout. And the for reasons I'll show you, you often start the parables of judgment a little tiny bit before Palm Sunday. So in Matthew 21, Jesus goes into Jerusalem, but actually the chapter before, he gives, right before, gives a parable, the labors in the vineyard. So it actually has some elements of the parables of grace and some elements of the parables of judgment, but we kind of lump them there to help with that. I put in two, and I struggled with this one. I put in two that some people don't think are parables. Jesus acted out a lot of stuff, right? It's not just when you say a parable, it's a spoken thing, a dark saying, a hidden word. But then he also did some very strange stuff. And a lot of people call those acted parables. So, for example, these three, he does right when he comes in Palm Sunday. Immediately, both Luke and Matthew have him doing these three things: weeping over Jerusalem, cleansing the temple, cursing the fig tree. Those aren't like, and he spoke a parable to them saying, that's him taking a cord and going and whipping those guys and getting them out of the temple, right? But he says that he's doing something. He's showing something that's still sort of metaphorically or symbolically really important. So they go along with all of it. And then the very last sort of, some people call it a parable and some people don't. I think it is, and I would put it just purple, but it's the great judgment. You know, it says when he separates the sheep and the goats, it's like all talks about, but it's almost like he's talking directly about what the judgment's about. So it's almost a little unparable-like. So I just put it in a different color. So look at it. So there's two leading into Palm Sunday, one in Matthew, one in Luke. One, that's the labors in the vineyard, which I think is familiar to you guys. We're going to take a quick look at it. And then the coins, or some people say the minas. Have you heard of the parable of the minas? Anyone heard of that? How about the parable of the talents? Have you heard of that? So the minas is Luke's version of the parable of the talents. Only nobleman had minas that he gave out to his servants instead of talents. So there's that. Luke puts this, essentially this one, all the way up here. And then you have Palm Sunday, and then Jesus does these specific things. He weeps over Jerusalem. He curses the fig tree. He cleanses the temple. But in the midst of that, right away, we're still Matthew 21 and 22, he tells about the two sons. So there's a son that says he won't obey the dad, but does obey. The son that says he will obey the dad and doesn't obey. Which one's really going to be okay? And then he gives a parable of the wicked tenants. You guys remember that one? That's like the guys have the property far away and he sends some servants and he beats them up. He's talking about the prophets. And then the guys send the son, the landowner, from far away. And he says, well, if we beat up the son, then boy, it'll really be golden. So they kill him. Never understood that. Have you guys understood that? Why would you think if you beat up the son, the guy's still alive? You don't get the land. Anyway, Jesus tells it because he's speaking a word against the tenants, right? So you see these parables start to be where Jesus is speaking against some people. Then you got the king's son wedding where a bunch of people invited, but they don't come. We're going to look at that one. I think that's really interesting. There's the fig tree that's not bearing anything. So Jesus is like, dung it. And well, we'll see if it bears fruit or not. There's the faithful servant and the bad servant. There's the wise and foolish virgins. Remember those? Those are the ones with the lamps. Five of them have the oil. Five of them don't. There's the parable of the talents at the end where Jesus talks about how the kingdom of heaven is like God, a nobleman, a ruler who gives out talents to three groups of people. Then the great judgment, and then that's it. So it's actually, this is fewer than our last group. Notice they go 21, 21, 21, 22, and then there's a little break. And the little break is often what's called the synoptic apocalypse now in the Bible. Because that's the Matthew 24, right? Where one person is kept in, like, when you see this happen, run for your life. And there's this whole thing he talks about that the coming judgments coming. Okay, so what I want to do with you is I want to give you and look at the themes that are in this section and feel like you have a handle, like we did last week, on what the main themes are without trying to hit everyone. That's as much as I'm going to do on every one, unless you guys have questions about them. But I'm going to take three of them tonight and we're going to briefly talk about them to develop the themes that are in all of them. That's what we're doing. So this is the first one. I want to look at the one that kind of comes in, this very first one, because you're probably a little aware of it, and it's interesting to think about. Okay. So Jesus, with the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, do you guys know this one okay? Have you guys heard of this story before? Or are you like, I'm not sure? What do you think? I'm getting some nods. Okay, well, a lot of times we don't understand what's happening before and after. Jesus has just had the statements that he makes about how hard it is for rich people to get into heaven. Pretty tough for the wealthy. It's almost like a little observational statement. And then right after this parable, he predicts his suffering and his death and his resurrection in Jerusalem. And so he tells this story. And I'm just going to tell this. We're going to read the other two. We're doing three tonight. But this one is not hard to tell. It's about a nobleman, it says. And he goes out, gets up really early in the morning, and he goes and hires some laborers to work in his vineyard. Remember that? And he hires them, and he goes, and he brings them back. And then it says 3 hours later, he goes, and he says, I better go hire some more. And then he says, well, 2 hours later, I better go hire some more. And then now we're 9 hours in. He says, time to hire some more. And then finally, he goes back and he sees some guys just sort of lollygagging around and says, what are you guys doing? He says, well, we didn't find any work today. It's only like 1 hour to go. And he says, nah, you guys too. Come on. I got work for you. So he takes them all to the vineyard. They're working there. But I mean, one of them's barely going to work. They're going to get off and it's going to be time to quit. And then he tells his foreman, you know, it's the agreed upon wage was it's called a denarius. It's the day's wage, about $100. So he tells the guy, says, hey, when you pay him, pay the last guys first and give them all $100. Right. So then the first guys who were just been there for half an hour, open up their paycheck. It's $100. For just an hour's work, they're stoked. You know the story, right? What happens? Yeah, all the rest of them. So everybody else starts doing the math, right? So 1 hour, $100. I've worked for 3 hours. I'm getting $300, $600, $900, and that guy's getting $1,200. Cool. That's a good day's work. I liking that one. So the guy opens at $1,200. Oh, mine's only still $100. Said, that's just not fair. I worked for 12 hours. Not even this 8 hour day thing. It's like all day. That guy just worked for half. In fact, I'm not even sure he worked. By the time he got here and he put on some gloves and he got out in the field, dude, he didn't do anything. They just kind of walked up and then you gave him that, but you gave me the same. So that's the thing, right? And the field owner says, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Day's wage. Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity? So the last will be first, the first last. Okay? So, what do you guys make of that? What's the lesson? It's like Jesus is not into equality of outcome. Maybe. I don't know. It's never too late to what? Never too late to accept God. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. God can do whatever he wants. He owns you. He made everything. You agreed to this and you got it, but you're mad. That's you comparing to his generosity to other people. So we get mad when God is generous to other people more than us. By the way, did the guy who opened his paycheck, the person who'd been there for 45 minutes, open his paycheck and got a full day's wage, did he earn it? No. So what's that called? Grace. He got favor for what he didn't work for. And so the other people are what about grace? Ticked. I don't like grace. I want God to give fairly for work. That's what Jesus Christ, I mean, he's God on earth, right? Talking right before he's going to go die for people. And he says, what you guys hate is grace. It's amazing. Say again. Free gift to take it. But the person that gets it, the person that worked hard has a harder time because he's just coming off of what? Saying rich people are going to have a tough time going to heaven. Why? They think they worked really hard to get their stuff. They think they deserve it. They're not going to like that the last, the least, and the little, and the lazy get into heaven. This is why it's hard. Okay, so the idea, the themes that come out are that the first thing I want to show you and make sure you see this, it's in all these parables. It's really interesting. It took me a while to get this. There's acceptance before there's rejection. In almost every one of these parables, you could argue differently for the fig tree. In almost every one of these parables, the person who's is having judgment on them was already part of the group. So in our parable, there is a group of who? Laborers, already hired by the vineyard worker, part of the group. They get mad and leave. So you'll see this. We'll look for this as a theme throughout. They're already part of it. It's not saying these ragtag people from across the street came over and were like, why don't you give us some money? No, it's people who are already in the group. They were already part of the circle. And then the judgment is based, at least in this one, we'll have to see if it holds true, right? On the refusal of grace. I don't like grace. All the parables of grace that Jesus was just telling, these guys are like, no, 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 no. I don't like this grace stuff. And then basically, it's about relationship with the owner, whoever the owner is going to be. In this case, it's the vineyard owner, not performance. They didn't get given stuff based on how much they worked. In fact, there's no mention that they worked hardly at all. And so you got this idea of trust not works. And this is, I dealt with fairly and kindly, but you're pushing to leave because you don't like how I do things. So they leave. And the judgment is, God says, did you hear the statement of judgment in the last parable? What did he say? Take your stuff and go. What a terrible statement. If you're talking about people in relationship with who? God. God says to the people, you really want to take off? Take your stuff and go. That's crazy, horrible. That's why it's a parable of judgment. Oh my goodness. May God never say that to us. You see this? Where is it? Oh, take what belongs to you and go. That will be, that's the theme of what will be judgment. You take what you think belongs to you and you can go because you don't want to be with who? With God. He does. They are accepted before they take off. So that's why this is here. This is acceptance before rejection. Friend. And God's not saying, evil one. No, I have extended this to you. I'm paying you. It doesn't say the guys who worked all day did a great job. There's nothing like that. It just is about their attitude. This is Jesus getting ready to come into where he's going to die. A week from now, Jesus is on a cross. Okay, so that's this one coming in. And then he comes in. And then he does his acted parables, looking over Jerusalem and speaking out against the horribleness of money changing in the temple and cursing the fig tree because it has no fruit. We could talk about those things. But what I want to do is not talk about every one because it overwhelms. I want to pick out a couple. So the ones I picked out, the first one that I thought we could talk about was the king's son's wedding because it's not very familiar to a lot of people. So the king's son's wedding. You guys know that one? Probably do. But let's go through it together. I put actually the text on the back of your sheet. And I want to look for these thoughts, these themes as we go through again. So here it is. It says again, Jesus spoke to him. This is now Jesus is in Jerusalem. Now he's, 4 days from death. And again, Jesus spoke to them in parables, saying the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. King's son wedding. And sent his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding feast, but they wouldn't come. Again, he sent other servants saying, tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen, my fat calves have been slaughtered and everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast. But they paid no attention and went off. One to his farm, another to his business. The rest seized his servants and treated them shamefully and killed them. Oh my goodness. So the king was angry. He sent his troops. He destroyed those murderers and burned their city. And then he said to his servants, the wedding feast is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Therefore, go to the main roads and invite to the wedding feast as many as you find. So those servants went out into the roads and they gathered all whom they found, both bad and good. So the wedding hall was filled with guests. Okay, we're not done, but let's pause there for a minute. What do you see theme-wise? Anything? Anything interesting? Casting out not of the disobedient, but of the... Rephrase it. Who got casted out? Nobody. It's people who were invited who wouldn't come. The king's son had a wedding feast, and the people said, I don't want to go. They were accepted, right? They were the invited ones. They were in. And they said no. In fact, they didn't just say no. What else did they do? They went ahead and killed his servants. And so the king, who's, you know, God, is the king of heaven, is like a king. He says, okay, we'll forgive him, no problem. No, this is a parable of judgment. They don't want anything to do with the king. He says, fine. You won't even come to my feast. That's the most important thing there is. It is my son's wedding feast. Therefore, you are cooked. He kills him. I mean, this is God talking. Jesus is talking. It's radically like we've done one other wedding feast one. It didn't say he went out and killed the people who wouldn't come. This is like, oh my goodness. Yeah, that's because Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is going to the cross to die for us. It's the only possibility you have of anything is to put your trust in him. And those guys are like, no, thank you. No, thank you. I'll go my own way. What else is there? Right, that's the idea. And so then he invited people who were out there. So the idea is the people that ended up at the wedding feast were not the originally invited ones. What else can we say about them? Outcasts, because they were invited. I like that. What, anything else you want to say about them? They certainly didn't earn being there. They went. They're willing to come. He got them to come in. A lot of times the losers are who's willing to come in. Yeah, and people argue this is Jews and Gentiles, but actually I don't think it is, but that's good. You could go there a little bit. It opens to the world. Yeah. There you go. I was waiting for someone to notice that they came in, both the bad and the good. So moral people got to come in. And immoral people got to come in. That's crazy if you're any sort of Pharisee. And honestly, if you're most any sort of evangelical Christian. Because we stake our flag on morals. And it says, well, who comes in? Just go get them to come in. Anyone that'll come in. I don't care if they're bad. They can be good. I don't care. This is a moral statement that it was moral and immoral. It wasn't like, you know, good dressed and bad dressed, sort of like somebody's wearing rags and somebody. No. Everybody, important that they came in. We got them to come because I want people in my hall because it's my son's wedding. The wedding hall is filled with guests. That's what Jesus is saying. The king wanted in this story that he's telling. Okay, but when the king came in to look at the guests, he saw there a man who had no wedding garment. Uh-oh. And he said to him, friend, how did you get in here without a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen. What in the world? All of a sudden, God's feeling a little bit capricious to my ear. He's not. I'm saying he's sounding it to my ear because I'm a fallen human being. But what do you think is going on? Any observations? Yeah.
Well, I was taking the word speechless. And you just said, well, you invited me. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. That's a really good observation. Speechless is a really odd word. The guy wouldn't answer him. What if he would have said, you know, I didn't have any money for a wedding garment. What if he would have said, you know, I think it looked really foolish. What if he would have said anything? What would that imply? That would imply he would be in a interaction with the guy. The guy could say back, I know it looks silly, but we're all wearing them here. Put them on. The guy could say, hey, I got one for you. Anything. Instead, the guy said, Zippo. It is a statement of rebellion. Yeah. That's right. Most people think they would have been provided. Most people say if you impelled people to come, they would not have been buying wedding garments. They would have worn them there. So the idea was they were provided and the man wasn't wearing it. And then he wouldn't even interact with the guy over why, according to Jesus. So then he's like, oh, the idea of chosen versus even called. We got them all in here, but will they know why they're here? Which is to celebrate what? The Son. That's the idea. Okay, so come here. Acceptance before rejection. The people who were murdered, the people who was cast out, they were all in before they were out. It wasn't like, boy, I hope they make it. No, they were there and they refused to interact with, or they wouldn't come. And judgment on the refusal of grace. I invited you to my feast and you wouldn't even come. Relationship, not performance. The idea is not so much the guy didn't have the right shirt on, like somehow works were involved, but that he wouldn't even interact with the host. So it follows the same sort of idea. It strikes our ear different because we're not used to God actually judging. But the reality is God does judge, but he judges not on works, but on receiving grace. Will you receive it? Wild. Absolutely wild. Okay. Same idea. I dealt with you fairly kindly and personally because you don't like how we do things. So that's this one. Right afterwards, Jesus starts talking about how judgment is coming, man. It's going to be raining down. It's the destruction of the temple that is going to come. Jerusalem's going to be overrun. He knows it. He's talking about what's going on. And then he goes into the fig tree where he sees a fig tree that doesn't have fruit, but it's his fig tree. So he's going to dung it. He's going to help it. It's going to be included, and he wants to see what happens. And then he talks about a faithful servant and a bad servant. I'm not going to say much about that except to say this. What's the opposite of bad? Good. Wouldn't you expect to see a good servant and a bad servant? Throughout all these parables, it's like the opposite of bad, the opposite of sinful is going to be trusting, not holy. Really interesting. Then he gets down to the wise and foolish virgins. He talks about, this is again, almost directly before, this one is very last things he says before he heads into the final supper and that establishes communion in Matthew 26, prays in the garden, and then gets betrayed and goes before the judges, Pilate and Caiaphas, is he does the wise and foolish virgins. If we have time, we can come back to that one, because what I really want to do is I want to do the talents. So we're going to spend a little time on the talents. To again, same themes that are in all of them. So let's look at that one. Right after he talks about the virgins, He says right away, no break. He says the kingdom of heaven, for it, will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. And then he went away. He had received the 5 talents, went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Okay. This is again one you might be familiar with. What do you think? Anything pop out at you? How does it do right away with our themes? They're all accepted. They're all given something by the king. A talent's a ton of money. Each of them was given a ton of money. One was given 5 times a ton of money. The other one's given 2 times a ton of money. And one of them's just given a ton of money. All of them, a lot. Okay, so all accepted. He did it. He didn't do it equally, right? That's kind of interesting. Like, right away, I think, wow, they have different abilities, obviously, because one was given 1 and one was given 5. And I would have expected the one who was given 5 to be the baddie. Usually the people who are rich and have a lot don't do well with it, like one who has little. But in all actuality, they're just given different amounts. And then they go and they play with it. They trade it. They trade, they do whatever. They use it for their life. Is there a difference between the one with 2 and the one with 5 in the story? It's kind of important, I think. Difference of ability. Any other difference? Difference of amount. Yeah, I think it's really interesting to note, and it kind of keeps you on this track of what the story is, to note that the exact same language is used of the 2 and the 5 guy. Like, it's not that the 2 guy wasn't doing the same thing as the 5 guy. It's just that God gave different people different amounts. But the real one who did something different was the guy with 1. He hid it. Okay, so let's go. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, "Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I've made 5 talents more." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." And he also who had the 2 talents came forward and said, "Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I've made 2 talents more." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Okay, do you see what I say and how he kind of treats them the same? Like, it's strikingly the same. Like, word for word the same. Like, it's almost like, why put it twice? Why put it twice again? It's not about the amount of money. It is not about the amount of money. It's not about whether you had 2 times as much money or 5 times as much money. The guy's like, "Oh, look at what happened with the money you gave me." It's not even like, "And this guy went to the stock market and that guy went to the bond market, and you should have stayed in the stock market because the risk return in the stock market is way better than just in bond market over time." You know, somebody could tell me more about that than I know. Real estate is the way to go. That guy with 5. No, none of that, right? It's just, I had it and I traded and used it and lived, and this is what came out, and I'm showing you what came out. And God's like, "Well, hey, awesome. That's great. You're ready for the next thing that I'm going to do with you." Right? He does it twice, exactly the same. But then there's the last guy. So he who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed, and so I was afraid. I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours." But his master answered him, "You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I haven't sown and gather where I scatter no seed? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him, give it to the one who has the 10. For to everyone who has will more be given, he who have an abundance, but from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Woo! Okay, my ear, Dax's fleshly ear, doesn't like this Jesus as much. What's he doing? What's he saying? What do you think? What's the problem with the guy who had one? He went in, buried it. Yes. It was about his lack of any relationship with the guy who gave it to him. He thought he was a mean guy who was going to get him. And so he better not do anything except hide that money away, because it's going to be demanded of him. And so he gave it back to him. But even in doing that, even if what you were was afraid, the guy's like, well, then you should have at least invested it. If that's what you really thought, then you didn't do very well. You guys have any sympathy for the guy? Any sympathy for him? Yeah, I do. I'm like, man, I seem to hide some stuff in the ground for God. It's like, sometimes I think God's pretty mean. Sometimes I don't like what he's done. Sometimes I go, oh no, Lord, I think, are you for me? Jesus Christ is going to the cross for us. He's saying the thing that's the most important, and this is one of his last parables. By the way, you can say, well, you know, maybe it's stronger. So if you really want to have fun, go back to the one with the meanest. It is exactly the same, if not stronger, about judgment. But think about it. Acceptance before rejection? Yeah. God was for him. According to his ability, he gave him a fortune and said, live it in rejoicing in me. Come back and show me how your life went. Awesome. And he thought, I can't enjoy, use, benefit from the treasure God's given me. I'm going to bury it. So it's not just God who didn't get anything. The guy got no anything. He refused what had been given to him. If I said to you, I mean, think about it a little bit. He's talking about talents. Hard for us to imagine talents. Think about your weight in gold. So think about maybe $10 million just for fun. That I came and gave you $10 million. And I said, hey, I've got a gift for you. I'd like to entrust to you $10 million. Have at it. Love to see what happens. And I walked away. That's the idea, right? And you thought, Dax is evil. He's going to come and kill my kids if I don't like have the $10 million for him. So you buried it in the ground. All of a sudden, at the very least, you could have put it in the bank and got the interest and used the money for whatever you wanted. So it's not only that it, like, his idea of how God is affected the whole of his life, right? He's rejecting the grace of God to give, because the word as it is, God gave to each of them the money that they had. So it's refusal of grace. And it's totally about, he makes sure we see in this final parable, it's not about the performance. It's not like the guy that had 5 came back with 15. And so he's awesome. The guy with 2 came back with 3.5. So he's pretty good. And the guy with 1 just came back with 1. So let's kill him. That's not what it is, right? I mean, it's basically each person got 100% return of the first 2. And God gave them according to their ability. If anything, then I'm thinking the guy with 2 did better because he had lesser ability. I don't know. Okay. He's about acceptance, not results. He has some joy in throwing his money around and the needlessness of fear. But can you see those themes? Yeah, go. Yeah, because they get twisted around. That's the idea of parables. Right. Well, I think, yes, that is a really good question. And I think a part of it in Jesus' sayings is they're meant to be mysterious. Because if you don't get the gospel, you're going to start running other ways with this. I've heard many a sermon on make sure you invest for God. Because he's going to demand an accounting at the end. And you're going to have to show your 100% return. What did you do for him? Many. Yeah, so, but that's not actually what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about the guy's attitude towards God as God freely gives him. And so this whole thing, yeah, once you get this, but it's not just this one. It's that this is the 12th parable in a row where Jesus essentially is talking about that. So for example, if I went, we're going to go there, but let's go here first. Like if I just went one up to the wise and foolish virgins, you guys have heard that one, right? There's 10 virgins and they have oil and they all go out to wait for their guy to come back from the feast that he's at. And they're waiting for him. And they wait till really late. And if you look at that one, it's they're all servants of who? The guy that's coming. They're all in. They're all accepted. In fact, if you're going to go wise and foolish, you would think that the wise ones are the ones that are not carrying around a clunky extra can of kerosene. They have a full lamp. And weddings didn't usually go till 3 a.m. So they're waiting for the guy reasonably having the amount that they needed without being like fearfully foolish. Like the opposite of the guy, right? They've got the right thing. And then they run out because it's like 3 a.m. and they've already fallen asleep and they wake up, oh no, he's here. What's the problem with that? According to what we've already seen in the parables, if you go to the wedding feast parable that we already had, where the guy gets kicked out for what? Not having the right thing on, but being silent. What do? They don't go. Man, my master's here. I don't care if I don't have a lamp. I got to welcome him. He's coming. I'll tell him. I ran out. I should have got more oil. I'll talk to him. Well, instead, what do? They have the same idea that this guy has. He's going to get me because I ran out of oil. I better go get some. And they run off to go get it. Where's their whole idea? I want to look good. I don't want to be the one who ran out of oil. So they go away. And while they're there, the guy's back and they're done. Because they're more concerned about, making their oil good than they are about the master's coming. That's what we're waiting for. The whole idea is the master's coming. I can't wait for my master to come. I can't wait for Jesus to come. That's why I'm alive. And the fact that you did or didn't bring an extra can of kerosene with you. Okay. Yeah, you messed up. Oh, well. You see, the bad and the good get to be at the wedding feast, except when some of them leave. Don't leave. That's what these are about, right? So over and over, these you go through and they're like, it's the same themes again and again. You're accepted first. God's got you. He's wanting you. It's like whosoever believes in me is saved, right? That's faith is where it's at for everybody. But then we push it away. We say, I don't want grace. I hate grace. I want merit. I want to be the one with oil in my lamp. And I can still sing that song. Can you? Give me oil for my lamp. Keep it burning, burning, burning. Quite sad. Okay. So the idea is, and this is nowhere, just a thought, that God is present under all of history. God's got us. He made us. But we can't see him. He's unseen. Faith is the faith in what's not seen. That God's actually at work in his kingdom and in what he's doing without us seeing it. But he pops up into some seen things, right? We do see creation or Abraham or Moses or just random examples of we see God actually appearing to Moses or God actually talking to Abraham. Then we get the person of Jesus. That's an amazing representation of God, the perfect one. And we know that it's coming, right? Where we are going to see Jesus Christ again. And we will be like him because we will believe in him? No. We'll be like him, 1 John 3 says, because we will see him as he is. So the unseen is going to become seen, especially up here. But at the present, we don't always see him. And I think that's what some of these parables and Jesus' teaching is about. He's like, the whole currency we have is trusting him, not living by sight. It's a big deal. So that's been the parables. That's the kingdom, grace, and judgment. We just did the judgment ones kind of briefly. But those themes, if you'll go back and look at them, and if you have questions, grab me. I love to talk about the parables. Remember the kingdom ones? The kingdom is everywhere. It's mysterious. God's at work, you guys, everywhere. We have a God who's not distant. It's not like he wound up. Do you know what it's called when the people who think God kind of wound up the earth like a clock? So it just runs, and then he went away, and he's watching it. That's called deism. A lot of our founding fathers believed in deism. They thought that God kind of set the world up in motion, and then he's kind of waiting to see who's going to be good and who's going to be bad. Santa Clausy. We don't think that. We have a God who entered creation. We have a God who's underneath all of it. We have a God who's active right now. We have a God, it says in the Bible, that Jesus is at the right hand of God interceding for us right this second. He's not far away. He's at work, and there's a response to this. People do push it away and say, I want nothing to do with this crazy grace gospel stuff. Or they say, this is life. I want it. It is about grace, upside down power, the least, the last, the little, the lost, death and resurrection is what Jesus is about. In fact, that's what he went and did. And then we saw tonight, acceptance before rejection. Like God gets people in and they push him away. When it says narrow door and wide gate, it's not that God says, boy, if you can really hurdle this, I'll let you in. God says, come in, trust my son. And people say, I will not do that. It will be based on my obedience and goodness. And God, I think, is like, well, you don't have any. What are you doing? And then relationship, not performance. So God's work all along, we trust it. Opposite of sin is a virtue, but faith. And faith becomes in Christ, who, as he's speaking these things, even about people rejecting him, is going to the cross to die for them, saying, if you will trust me, my death is all the life you're going to need. Pretty awesome. So the last line of my commentary that I like is this, and I liked it, so I put it up here too. This is Capon. He said, trust him, therefore, there's really nothing more to do. There's really nothing more we can do than have an attitude towards God that he does care for us. And so that's why I don't think it's wrong. And you're saying, hey, who am I, Becky, as you started talking about the talents? I think sometimes I feel like I can be like the guy who's going to hide his talent in the ground. Because I can start thinking, man, God's going to get me. I really sinned a lot. And instead, where I start to go as the gospel gets into my heart is to talk to him. Like even to say, boy, I really screwed this one up, God. And not to be like hiding from him or getting to the point of saying, I think he's mean, so he's going to get me. No, I think he loves me. And man, I am such a bum in this area. And then I receive, oh, wait, Jesus really died for me. Like I'm clean because of Jesus. That's the direction that we start to go. And that's what we need to speak to each other is this idea of absolution, of forgiveness, because Jesus really did pay it all. And we trust him. Okay. That's been the parable of judgment. So let's take a stop there. That's me backing up and trying to go a little slower content wise. Thoughts, comments, any questions? Well, the one that you're currently, that you have is a very good one. I liked it. And then I also like that's called Kingdom, Grace, and Judgment. It's a 3-volume commentary by Capon. So I went with his breakdown generally in terms of how he breaks them down. Different people have different ways they break them down. This is not, how you think about the parables is not universally accepted by anyone. Everybody's got their idea. So this is my idea. I've incorporated some from some other people. I think tying them to the life of Jesus is a really good way to think about it. So that's what we do, try and do. Can you believe Jesus was only on earth for 3 years? Like in ministry, he was at 33, I know. But in terms of like his like public ministry, 3 years. Like I blink and 3 years have gone by. Yeah. I think that's true. I don't think that the idea of delivery, because they said, you delivered over to me this amount, this is what I have. And I think that the idea where we tend to focus is in the idea of accounting. But I think in these parables, it's super clear that God's not accounting. So the idea isn't, let me show you how much I've made. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm with you. So what you're getting at isn't the difference of God interacting with them. God interacted with them the same way. The difference is how they interacted with God. So the idea was God accepted them first. He gave them fortunes. And then the idea was one of them said, you're mean. I don't really like you. I don't want to be with you. And so God essentially is like, okay, if you don't want to be with me, the alternative is death. what did he do? Bind him up, take it from him, toss him into the darkness, because the darkness is the only alternative to being with God. I mean, I feel like we want a middle option. Kind of what I want is I want people to receive Jesus or have a relationship with God, go to heaven. But I don't want God to be like mean. So I want kind of a middle ground of God to keep God patient, like just be patient and wait, because maybe they'll come around eventually if I keep talking to them. So kind of like the Lazarus and Dives, the Lazarus and the rich man parable, where the guy has lived and he says, why don't you go tell my brothers? And Jesus' message in the parables has been that more waiting and time won't help. It's what your relationship and heart is towards God. Will you receive grace? And if you're not going to receive it, you're not going to receive it, which is pretty crazy in my ideas. I don't mean like you stop sharing with people, not at all. But in terms of like wanting God to give a lot of times what the idea is a post-death time of maybe people will come to repentance later, which I don't see in the Bible, but fits my mental idea of I sure want God to save everybody. Maybe. That's right. That's right. God, that's in Peter, right? That's right. And he doesn't, right? The problem with all these people is they're not coming to him. They are pushing him away. As long as it was schnitzel. Yeah, no, I think the reality of that, that fights against that is just that everybody was compelled in from the highway. At that point, it wasn't invitees. It was like, find a warm body and drag him in here, you know? Well, talent, right? Where you get them. Yep, it is. The talent there is a specific reference to money. But I don't think it's necessarily wrong to think God gifts people in different ways. I mean, the word for our own giftings is gift. Grace gifts sometimes say charisma. Heard of charismatics. That's all gift, right? So the idea to me is God does gift us things, and then I get jealous of other people's gifts.
Two were perfect, they doubled their money, and the third one didn't do anything. But I always feel like, why wasn't there someone who said, I tried, I'm sorry, I failed? Because there's that forgiveness, and it just feels incomplete to me.
Yes. I think that's a really good thing. I think that when I'm thinking of a story like that, I would think of maybe five people. One of them would have not just buried the money, but spent it on gambling, and they would really be tossed out. The guy who buried it would be like somewhat bad. And then the two people here should have varying returns. So I could see, and God could say, oh, bless, because this is the merit-based head that I have. Like the guy that gets 20 back out of his five, you get on in here. The guy that gets zero back because he wasted it, you go out to the outer darkness. That's actually not the parable at all. In fact, that violates the meaning of the parable. I think Jesus told it so those two get the same response. Is God just wants you, God gives you, and he just wants you to live with it. Like, it's not even much of an accounting. It's, yeah, I doubled it, but it wasn't like two times. It was like, this is what happened. So I think you could have had the second guy, if it was going to preserve what the parable meant, you could have had the second guy being like, well, here's the one that I made. And he was like, oh, great. You know, I don't think that was the idea. The idea is, I knew you were a mean man. That's the idea. Do you think God's a mean God? Sometimes we do. Well, wait until your kid dies. Wait until you get cancer. Wait until you, all of a sudden, our circumstances drive us to think God is, I mean, my mother-in-law died in my house. She was on hospice. She died in my living room. She had breast cancer. To her dying breath, she was like, God hates me because look at my life. And she'd live a tough life. So what would you guys say to that? Yeah, that's what I said. What I said, and for better or worse, I said, that is so wrong. God adores you. He adores you. He's given you gifts and merciful things in ways you can't even see. But I know his heart for you is that he died on the cross for your sins forever. He's given you the greatest gift you could ever have. And it's sitting there on your lap. Would you just give him a hug? And she's like, no, I hate him. That's the scariest place to be. And that is this parable to me. Because that's like, you really don't want, you really won't have a relationship with me. You're really forcing me away from you when I'm giving you everything that you could possibly need, which is the blood of Jesus Christ for all my sins forever. You guys, we don't have five talents. We've got 10 million. Our streets are lined with talents in heaven. The streets of gold, right, or something. Incredible. Anybody else before we're done? We're past. But way to get through the parables. The parables are really fun. We could spend, I a little bit sad at myself. I didn't stretch this out and just do it 12 weeks on the parables. We could go real slowly. But at least here you got a flavor for what the themes are. I'll slow it down. Yeah, I know. Especially